Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on a grey Friday in Reykjavik, Iceland. Summer still hasn't come to us yet. The whole country seems to be stuck under a big patch of low pressure that makes everything feel a bit heavy and sluggish. Haven't been feeling great this week, but I've had lots of video games to keep me company and keep me occupied. I've been playing a lot more Final Fantasy 16, a really good game. I'm about probably a third of the way through it or halfway through it. I'm into the main quest now. I'm still enjoying it. I'm still enjoying the spectacular boss battles, the fast and furious combat, and the kind of HBO show vibe, because it's so many cutscenes and so much voice acting and so much story. It's almost like a cross between a video game and watching a show. I'm continuing to enjoy it. It's perhaps losing a little bit of luster. It's getting a little samey, but I am still enjoying it, and I do plan to power on through Final Fantasy 16 and get to the end of it and do an episode about it later. But I also played, in the last week, a game called Gerda, A Flame in Winter. This is a really interesting little game by Don't Nod. It's a choice-based adventure game, story game, and with lots of branching paths and lots of interesting things to talk about. So that's going to be the featured game of this episode. But before I get to Gerda, A Flame in Winter, there was actually an Annapurna showcase just yesterday, I believe, and they revealed a couple of new games and gave updates on some existing titles that we knew about already. So I thought it might be fun to just run through a few of the highlights. Annapurna had an incredible hot streak with Kentucky Route Zero and Outer Wilds and Sayonara Wild Hearts and all of those great games that they put out. They've perhaps lost a step. They put out a few stinkers like 12 Minutes and a couple of other games that weren't quite there, like Hindsight and that other game that was called Beyond the Blue or something like that. So they have released a few games that didn't quite hit the heights that we've grown accustomed to from them, but they still have it in them to publish some really, really good indie games. And it looks like they've got some really good stuff coming up, actually. For example, they have Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. This is by Simigo, the company that did make Sayonara Wild Hearts. I've played all of their games, and I like what they do a lot. This is a really interesting looking game. We've seen a little bit of it before, but we got an interesting trailer that showed off some more content from the game. It had a creepy voiceover, and it was, how to describe it really? It was kind of a cult espionage kind of feel, like a kind of David Lynch Cold War codes and mazes kind of vibe to the whole thing, like spies mixed with kind of cult stuff. It looks really interesting. The visual style is cool. It's very bleached out. I did like that there were mazes and puzzles flashing up on the screen a lot. So I'm not quite sure what Lorelei and the Laser Eyes is going to be yet. We haven't seen much raw gameplay, as they say, but it is coming to Switch and Steam. There wasn't a release date, but it's interesting that it's coming to Switch and Steam. So that was a new bit of info about Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. And we saw another trailer for Cocoon. We've seen quite a lot of that game now. That's the game from Jeppe Carlsson, who was involved in Inside and Limbo. It looks really interesting. That one is coming out on September 29th, so we have a date for Cocoon now. There were a few new games that were announced too, or at least games that I hadn't seen before. There was an interesting looking walking and photography game called Lushfoil Photography Sim by a developer called Matt Newell. And it looks gorgeous. It looks like you're just hiking through nature and taking photographs of stuff. Not quite sure where the gameplay will take you or how the structure of it will be, but it looked really nice. The nature was beautifully rendered, and we saw footage of first-person traversal through snowy areas, through forests, through Japanese parkland, And it looks like you can really get out there and explore. So I'm quite curious what the structure of this gameplay will be and how the photography will be gamified. Like, do you have to get certain shots? Do you have to capture certain elements? Or is it a pure self-led exploration and photography? So it's an interesting looking game. It's beautiful to look at. And I love a good walking game where you're just experiencing an environment. So Lushfoil Photography Sim looks really interesting to me. We also saw a new game from Keita Takahashi, the maker of Katamari series and Watam. This one is called To a T, and very, very strangely, it seems to be about a person who is stuck in a T pose. That is the default pose that a lot of video game NPCs or characters will have in a game. So it's a joke, really, about a common bug, I suppose. It almost looks like it could be an April Fool's joke, but it does seem like there is an entire game based around this character being stuck in a T-pose, walking around with his dog. Everyone else in the world can move normally, and he's stuck in a T-pose. There was some body positivity, and Your Shape is Perfect, and a strange pop song that went along with the trailer singing about this poor T-pose guy. There wasn't a date on this one, but, you know, I will play anything by Keita Takahashi. The Katamari games and Watam were both just an absolute riot, just peak Japanese craziness. Really, really fun. The next one we saw was a game called Flock. And this seemed to be an exploration game where you're riding a bird as a little character, sort of skimming the ground around quite a nice, pretty, but quite basic looking world. It looks more illustrative than photographic realism. It had a nice bright art style to it. And what you do is you fly around, you find animals hiding in the nature, and you charm them. When you charm them, they join your flock, and you have a massive array of different creatures that fly around behind you in a kind of airborne Pikmin kind of style. They also showed off some multiplayer, so you can travel around with friends, charming creatures, showing each other where you found the creatures that you have. And that's all we saw, really. So it's a game that has an interesting mechanic that we saw, but I didn't see much in terms of structure and how the game builds. Like, it could just be a pure exploration game with creature collecting. But you would think that there might be a little bit more of a game structure on there to show progress and to reward you and that kind of thing. Maybe you'll have a codex, that kind of thing. So I'm curious to see more of Flock. It certainly looked quite interesting. We did also see a little bit more of Thirsty Suitors by Outer Loop Games that made Falcon Age. I'm not sure what to think about this one. I like the concept. It looks like there is dance battles, there is cooking, there is skating, there is a conversation and a visual novel element to it. We've seen quite a lot of this one by now, but I still cannot quite piece together in my head what this game is going to be. But I've seen so much of it that I'm quite curious to play it, and I will get my chance because it's coming out on November the 2nd. So Thirsty Suitors is coming out this year. Another interesting one was called Ghost Bike. It's the first time that I've heard about this one. It's coming out in 2024 on Game Pass, and this is a cycling game with a sort of a sable-y art style to it. Very vivid, illustrative sort of style with black lines drawn around things and then blocked out colours. And we saw a little bit of cycling through nature and kind of freewheeling and exploring, a little bit like in Season, which came out earlier this year. But we also saw some footage of racing as well. So I'm quite curious with this one, if you're going to be travelling between towns to enter races. That seems like a fun structure if that's the case. I love the idea of being able to cycle out in the world as well as in a race structure, so I hope that there is plenty of that. That could be a really pleasant, chill experience. Ghost Bike, that one is called. And the final game that I've got here, the final game that was in the showcase, and perhaps a bit of a surprise, was the reveal of Blade Runner 2033 Labyrinth. This is the first game that Annapurna is also going to be developing. So the publisher has started developing games in-house. They've put a team together. And Annapurna is obviously part of Annapurna Pictures or Annapurna International, whatever it's called. I forget the name of the overarching company, but they make films as well. So it's interesting that Annapurna Interactive, the video game strand of Annapurna, has started to join the dots between film and games. So they've put together this concept of another Blade Runner video game, first one we've seen for quite a while. It is set between the two Blade Runner films, around the time of an event called The Blackout. And it's hard to say what kind of game it is. A lot of what we saw was classic Blade Runner visuals, flying cars, giant cities with neon and fog. But we did also see someone using a machine, and there was a voiceover. It seemed to be a former Blade Runner who was doing some kind of investigative work using a machine that pulls CCTV footage in and out of focus by turning a kind of a rotary knob. So that could be part of the gameplay. We also did see some footage of that character walking through a cool blue Blade Runner kind of interior. Either of these could have been cutscenes, or it could have been gameplay. It wasn't exactly clear. So all it was really was a teaser trailer. It's hard to say what the game is, but it's certainly interesting to have another game coming in the Blade Runner universe, that's for sure. So that was the Annapurna Showcase. As always, some interesting stuff in there. And just before we get on to the featured review, allow me to say this is a patron-supported show. So if you like this podcast, whether it's your first time or whether you're a long-term listener, you can support this podcast for $1 a month. You get 10 bonus episodes about music and different off-topic subjects. You get an invite to our wonderful, friendly, warm-hearted Discord community where people are talking about games all day, every day. It's a really lovely, quiet little corner of the internet. And you get to support this show. All the money goes back into equipment and music and games to review, paying for the URL of the podcast, gamingintheWild.com, and all of those associated costs. So if you would like to support this podcast and join the community, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingintheWild. There will be a link to that in the description if you would like to click through and become a supporter. And a big thank you to the two newest patrons, Zanum and Mark. So thank you very much to Zanum and Mark for signing up to support the podcast. And thank you very much to you if that is something that you think you might do. And with all of that said, let's move on and talk about the featured game of this episode, Gerda, A Flame in Winter. So Gerda, A Flame in Winter is by Don't Nod, who made, famously, Life is Strange and the game Harmony Fall of Reverie, that I reviewed a couple episodes ago. It came out in 2022 on PC and Switch. I played it on Switch. It was generally good. Occasional hitches, and the text was a little small, but it's mostly voiced. But it ran pretty well on Switch, I would say, and it felt cozy to play it on handheld. Metacritic has this one at 80 to 82, but only from 16 reviews in total across formats, so it didn't get widely covered. How long to beat has it? 7 to 9 hours. There is an option to play multiple playthroughs as well. There are a lot of forking paths in this game, and a DLC recently came out, which is why I ended up getting a code for it. So there is another DLC for the game after the main story completes. And the developers describe this one by saying, "You have 5 days to save your husband, who has been arrested by the Gestapo. Investigate, explore, and form allegiances in this story-rich RPG light. Who will you trust?" And I have to say about this one that it's an excellent choice-based story game set in Nazi-occupied Denmark towards the end of World War II. The compelling story is packed with ethical quandaries that have a real impact, and the tension grows as your every small decision can have life or death consequences. So this is a story-based game, but you can move around in the game. You do get to control Gerda. She is the main character. She is a nurse who lives in Denmark during the Nazi occupation. As I said, it's towards the end of World War II, so it's a very well-known and well-documented period of history, but I'm not sure I've ever seen anything based in the occupied Denmark before. Gerda is a nurse. She's married, and she has a quiet life. She lives in a log cabin out in the countryside. It's the middle of a deep winter. And right from the start, the game does an excellent job of contrasting the village life of rural Denmark and the darkness of this period. So there is a military presence, and people that live in this village in Denmark, out in the sticks, they are very far from the war in some ways, but in another way, it has come to their doorstep. There is an occupying force in the village. There are Nazi soldiers around, and they are doing Nazi things. They are checkpointing. They are shaking people down. And it makes the community have a sense of foreboding. There are also informants who are going to the Nazis, collaborators who are reporting people for all kinds of small infringements for which, you know, the consequences are dire. And the Nazis themselves are trying to turn people to their cause through blackmail and that kind of thing. And by, you know, like holding a loved one and then making their partner go out into the community and report back to them. So they have eyes and ears everywhere. It's certainly a very tense period of history. And I really liked the way that this game juxtaposes the simplicity and wholesomeness of Danish village life, but also shows how the military occupation has kind of warped and pressured the community, made relationships go strange, created division, both political and ideological and ethical, between different citizens. And you get to experience all of this as Gerda, because Gerda is half German, half Danish. And so where her loyalties lie is really down to the player in some ways. You do get to role play Gerda, and you do get to make a lot of choices that have all kinds of both incremental and huge outcomes on the story in a really cool way. And at the start of the game, Gerda's life is turned upside down when her husband is taken in by the Gestapo, as the description said. And the game is basically going to be you playing as Gerda and dealing the cards that you are dealt, like playing the cards that you are dealt, rather, to try and keep your husband safe. But also, there are all kinds of things at play in the community and at this period in history, and they all interlock in the coolest possible way. And so as Gerda, you have to choose where your loyalties lie and what your priorities are. And I really enjoyed the sense of deep roleplay that I got from this game. But I will get more into that in a while. But this game also looks pretty nice. I would say that the art style is painterly. It looks like brush strokes. It's quite impressionistic at times. But it's also like a realistic landscape painting that isn't overly detailed, a little bit smudgy. It's isometric. You get to control Gerda, you get to walk around. She's always wearing a red headscarf, and you get to walk around simple but effective environments, like Gerda's humble wooden cottage, like the snowy market square, where you will find traders, you'll find gossips, you'll find maybe some black market salespeople. And you have to choose who you will and won't associate with and what you will and won't say to them. If you are anti-Nazi, for example, there might be a choice for you to say something to that effect. But then you have to ask yourself, is the person that you're saying it to safe ears? Are they going to sympathize with you? Do they agree with you? Or are they possibly the kind of person that might report that? And what kind of trouble might you get into? So you really do feel the pressure of this pressure cooker environment that the Nazi occupation has created. You will see elements of the Nazis around as well. There are military checkpoints, there are patrols. You will get into altercations, you will be pulled over, and it's quite tense. It's really interesting. The moment-to-moment gameplay is generally fun. I felt a lot of agency in this game. You will also explore the shops and the speakeasies and the back rooms and find out what's going on under the surface in this interesting little town. And the well-rendered visuals really help. It really does feel chilly. The snow feels deep. There is a little icy effect that comes onto the screen when you're outdoors. You really do feel the deep winter, and you really do feel the pressure. It's all pretty atmospheric, and it's good stuff. My only beef with the visuals was that the text was a little small for my Switch screen, and that's on a well-lit Switch OLED. So if you are sensitive to that, then maybe this is a game to play on Steam. I used the touch screen for a lot of the game, but I do think that it would play very well on mouse as well. It's also voice acted, so I didn't have to read every single word. You could listen to the voice acting as well. I barely used the controller. I touched the screen to move around and to select all my options. So if this game ever comes to mobile, it would be pretty good on an iPad as well. It has a simple piano score. Not much to report on that. It's not stellar, but it gets the job done. It's a little mournful. It's a little wistful and melancholic. I would say that all in all, it's a very well-presented game. They did a great job with it. It's atmospheric. It's well done. It's well put together. But the real meat and essence of this game is in the gameplay. The game is episodic. So at the start of the game, you're at Gerda's country house, a little wooden cabin out in the woods. Your husband is taken away. You get to walk around the house. You can look at things. You can look at correspondence. You can look at objects. Some of them are quest relevant. Some of them you can pick up, like food or medical supplies or different useful items. And whether you do or don't have any food or medical supplies on your person can have big implications when you get into difficult scrapes further down the road. So it is worth going around and picking everything that you can up in this game. And there are two modes to the game, really. There is the map screen, and then there are the scenarios that you get to walk around in. On the map, you will see several options. It will zoom out from Goda's position, and you'll see an illustrated map of the area. You can see the village, you can see all of the different buildings, the church, the military base where the Nazis are based. You can see checkpoints on the roads. And at different points in the game, different map locations will become available to you. But something that is very interesting about this game, and something that I think made me feel more invested in it, is that when different map pins appear, you'll also see the time of day. And sometimes there'll be five or six different options, and you might have met someone who has asked you to come to their house. You might have spoken to someone else who has requested your assistance in an activity of some kind. And then you might have been asked to report to the Gestapo headquarters to answer a couple of questions. And you can't do all of them. The clock is ticking. So if you can only do three out of five or six different activities, then you're having to make some pretty tough choices on a regular basis. Like, do you help an old friend? Do you go and try and get some useful information out of an acquaintance? Do you go and help someone who is in hiding? Do you just go and talk to the Germans to try and persuade them and try and charm them and get a better outcome for your husband? You have to choose where you're going to go, and the choices are difficult. You can't do everything, and I really liked that you have to have this added layer of role-playing Goda by choosing what she cares about in a really, really effective way. And I like that that forced you to prioritize certain people or storylines, and the other ones you just have to leave to chance, and your presence or absence might lead to circumstances that you will come across later, like whether someone managed to escape a situation, whether a handoff of information happened, might be based and dependent on whether you chose to go or not, and you will see the consequences down the road. And when you choose the map place that you want to go to, when you've chosen a location, you will come into a playable scene. These are isometric. You'll get to maneuver Goda around. You can interact with objects, people, and points of interest. All of them are very clearly marked with a bright red dot, so you can see everything that you can interact with. That's a really good quality of life factor in basically a point-and-click game, which I guess this is to some degree. And throughout each scene, choices come at you thick and fast. For example, if a wounded soldier is brought into the civilian doctor's surgery, do you treat them? Like, do you take your oath as a nurse seriously enough to just treat someone that shouldn't be in there because it is a civilian, not military, doctor's surgery? Or will you conserve those medical supplies for a local, like a farmer who's had an accident, or for a sick friend? So right there, right from the start of the game, this is a choice that you get. Do you treat a Nazi soldier, or do you conserve your medical supplies? And you will encounter that soldier again, and whether you did or did not treat them will matter. And whether you do or do not have those medical supplies will matter. And do you put yourself at risk in this situation by speaking forthrightly and trying to throw these Nazis out of the surgery where they have no right to be, or do you hold your tongue? In this argument that ensues, you can say nothing. You can side with the doctor, the old man who is your boss and the doctor of the surgery, or you can encourage him to deal with the Nazis. And this is just the first of many, many, many choices. You'll be confronted with all kinds of ethical quandaries of this type. Like, given the opportunity, do you steal something that could come in critically useful, like some morphine or some fine wine that you could use to bribe someone should the need arise? But in doing so, you're depriving someone else of that, and that may well have consequences that you encounter. There is also a feeling of whether or not you should trust people, whether or not you can speak freely who you choose to trust. For example, one of your best childhood friends is engaged to someone who is in the Nazi army. So can you trust her? Can you trust her with your secrets? Can you trust her with your fears? When she has familial and romantic entanglements that are questionable, is she going to shop you in? Is she going to tell her partner things that you said? And will that then get back to the Nazis? So you really are walking a fine line all the time, and there is a sense of danger and a sense of choices mattering that I really, really enjoyed in this game. And that's codified into the systems of the game. So all of your micro choices are made consequential by the way the game works, and they have visible repercussions, big and small. First of all, there is a this means that cause and effect aspect. So big story choices that you make will open or close different narrative branches. And for example, if someone is alive because you treated them, or dead because you did not, like, their presence will affect how the story goes from here and what options are available to you later. So there is that simple cause and effect part of choice making, but there is also a more dynamic, interlocking, incremental kind of implication to everything you do as well. And that's because choices that you make will affect Gerther's affinity gauges. For every major character that you meet, you can have a plus or negative affinity. It can get as high as plus 10, and I think I got as low as minus 6 with some characters that I did not respond well to in the game. And these scores affect how people respond to you, and that matters at crucial moments when it really comes down to it. Like, will they cover for you if required? And if they don't, that could have dire implications for Gerda. Will they trust you with important information that is sensitive? Whether or not you have managed to get into their good books could really, really change what Gerda knows at key moments in the game. If it's a guard, will they let you pass? Will they let you sneak in somewhere? Or will they turn you in for trying? All of that depends on tens of decisions that you've made throughout the story and where your affinity gauge lies with that individual. So other people's opinions of you matter a lot. And you have to choose whether or not you want to court the approval and affinity of some pretty dicey characters in this game. And that in itself presents a whole series of quandaries. For example, if you're currying favor with influential people of all stripes, like a Nazi officer or a black market trader or a Gestapo investigator who's terrorizing this community, do you want that person to be on your side? And if you do, what is the cost of it? And what does that do to Gerda? How do you feel as the player becoming a collaborator or resisting them and putting yourself at risk in return? So who do you trust? Who do you pretend to trust? Who do you try and lie to? Who do you try and play? And do they see through you, or do you succeed at that? If you string along bad people, will word of it get to others? Will word of it get to people that are in the resistance? And you yourself will become a collaborator black sheep. All of this is at play all the time in such an interesting way. And all of the choices can cut both ways, as both the occupation and the resistance have eyes and ears everywhere. So how Gerda is perceived by individuals and also in the community really matters. There are also some really interesting general affinities that Gerda has. This is her beliefs, really. This is who she's siding with in this difficult period of history. There are two dichotomies. There is Danish and German. So that's two halves of her identity, really. She has a German father and a Danish mother. She speaks both languages. So what does Gerda feel? Does she feel like a German? Does she feel like a Dane? Does she side with the Danish against the German occupiers? Does she sympathize with the German people who perhaps don't want the political regime that is currently leading their country into disaster? And every choice that you make makes your Danish or German affinity go up and down, and that will affect further choices that you have to make and how people respond to you. There is also an occupation and resistance meter, so you can side with the occupying Nazi forces if you want to, or you can side with the resistance that is trying to push them out. And both of those will affect, like, how people respond to Gerda, like what kind of information she can get out of people, how she is perceived really, really matters. And those will go up and down pretty regularly based on how you represent Gerda's beliefs. Things that you say in normal conversation will make your affinity meters go up and down really fast, actually. And those affinities matter because when you talk to people, sometimes you will see a dice roll. You will see that you have a certain chance of getting the result that you want, and it will be red or green based on your chances of getting it through. You can have very difficult rolls where the odds are you're going to fail. You can have easy rolls where the odds are that you're going to win. And what makes the rolls difficult or easy is your affinities. So all the choices that you've made, all the things that you have done, all of the things that you have said, chosen to say, the attitudes that you've chosen to represent have shaped what you can and cannot do in this game in a really interesting way. For example, if you're talking to a Danish resistance fighter and you need them to help you with something to try and get your husband out of prison, if you have a high Danish affinity and a high resistance affinity, that might be an easy role. So all of the choices that you have made, all of them are consequential because they decide what you can and cannot do in the game. I absolutely love this system. It really made me feel like everything that I was doing mattered. And that really, really invested me in the moment-to-moment gameplay in a way that I really, really enjoyed. And I'm not sure that I've seen before in a visual novel. It almost had like a kind of Disco Elysium-y feel to it, where you have your... it's obviously that is a much more complex and heady and intellectual game, because you have all of your subconscious elements and it's a bit more highfalutin. This is like a cut-down baby version of that, where you are deciding what kind of girder you want to be, and that is in turn designing the outcomes that you see. And I will say that by the time I got to the end of this game, I was very happy with my outcome. I think I got kind of a good ending. And I was very happy to see at the end of the game that you do find out what happened to all of the different people that you met along the way. You get a bit of text about them, a bit like at the end of a game like Pyre, where all the choices that you have made, the order in which you dealt with things, the people that you prioritized over other people, all have outcomes based on your choices. That was very much the case in Gerda. You get to see how your actions affected the lives of all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. Life or death, whether they stayed or left, whether they were captured or whether they got free. And so you get to see all of the fruits of your decisions, your successes and your failures, and you get to reflect upon all the decisions that you made in a really, really cool way. So as for the good things and the bad things about this game, I think that the gameplay design is absolutely wonderful in this. I think it's very well leaned together. All of the elements plug into a coherent whole. It made me feel invested in the moment-to-moment gameplay. I felt deeply invested in Gerda. I felt like I had agency over what kind of person she was, over where her loyalties lay. I liked that that was ambiguous at times, and that I was forced into difficult decisions, and that I was forced into questionable circumstances, and that I was forced to make, or I was put in a position where I could make uneasy alliances with unsavory people or not. And I felt very challenged by that. I felt that the game pushed me into awkward circumstances, and I feel like all of that good work that the game does gave me kind of a little glimpse of insight into how difficult it must have been to be a person navigating this period in history, and how your every word, a slipped word, could lead to your detention, and what detention might mean at the hands of the Nazis is obviously dire indeed. So I really liked the way that all of the gameplay came together. I would also say that the game looks very nice. I liked the painterly exteriors. I liked the way that it represented this frozen, deep winter Danish countryside. I liked all of the interiors and different locations. I enjoyed the voice acting in this game, from Gerda's German father to the local shopkeeper to drunks, street drunks that you will meet. The voice acting added a lot. I also think the writing was very good. I think most of these characters were believable and interesting. They were multi-dimensional in a way that I liked. Much like in Harmony for Reverie, actually, I liked that the characters had more than one thing going on in their heads. I think Don't Nod are quite good at this. They're quite good at these layered, choice-based games. And this is another good example of it. As for the bad things, I would say the font size was a little small on Switch. Performance had a few stutters here and there. Load times were quite high. Whilst playing it on Switch, I did find that the load times were so long that I could set the Switch down and check my phone before it would load into the next scene. If you've been playing games like Final Fantasy 16, which doesn't even have loading screens because the SSD loads you in so fast that you don't need them, it can be a bit of a step backwards going back onto the Switch with these 10, 15, 20 second load times. It was the same in Harmony as well. So for all of the praise that I've just layered on Don't Nod for their choice systems and their well-written characters, I think optimization for Switch is not one of their strengths, I will say that much. I would also say that from time to time, I got slightly unpredictable outcomes. So if you're trying to navigate towards an outcome by making lots and lots of little choices along the way, sometimes you might make a choice that you think is going to lead in one direction and the outcome can be slightly unpredictable. I think this may be by design, but it never feels good when it happens. If you are trying to make something happen and your choice has the opposite effect, that can reduce that sense of agency that you feel. But you know, that's very much like life. Not every choice that you make comes off perfectly. I have very little bad to say about this game, actually. I was very pleasantly surprised by it. I think it is a really wonderful little game. I really, really enjoyed role-playing Gerda. I played this game in two sittings. I really felt like I made Gerda my Gerda, if you know what I mean. She felt Danish. I think that she felt like a Danish citizen. And so as Gerda, I would often side with the locals. But she did not judge people just for being German as well. She had some sort of humane sympathy for the Germans. Not the Nazis, of course. You know, there were red lines. She was resistance-friendly, and she was devoutly anti-occupation. But she was not racist against Germans, at least the German populace, because, you know, half of them didn't want the Nazis in power in the first place. She was pragmatic when it came to voicing her beliefs in dangerous company. I definitely felt like, as Gerda, I played my cards close to my chest. I didn't take many people into my confidences. She was generally anti-violence, but she was not a pacifist at all costs. It was really fun to feel this level of authorship over the character in the game. I think quite rare, I would say. So I had a really good time with that one. If you like choice-based games, if you're interested in this period in history, and if you're up for being put into difficult ethical and moral quandaries over the course of a seven-hour game, then try this one out. There is also that DLC as well, so there is an extra story that I will certainly come back to later. It takes up the mantle of Livia, another character in the story, so we get to find out more about Livia. I'm really looking forward to playing it. That's Gerda, A Flame in Winter. So I hope you enjoyed that review of Gerda, A Flame in Winter. I think this is a little bit of an underrated game. I think if more people had played it, it might have featured on a few end-of-year lists for a specific kind of player who's really into that kind of thing. I want to say thank you to Brad Galloway from the So Video Games podcast for recommending this one to me. I take Brad's recommendations seriously. It put the game on my radar, and I was very happy when the opportunity for a review code came up. So thanks very much to the publisher as well for providing me with a review code of the game. I'll be back next week with a new episode. In the meantime, please do come and say hi on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube as Gaming in the Wild. And you are, of course, welcome to support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. That's all from me. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.